Good morning, everyone. The Committee on Zoning Landmarks and Building Standards will now begin. We will start with the deferred agenda. Items number 19767, Second Ward Ordinance Referred 72518, and another item, number 19768, Second Ward Ordinance Referred 72518. These are two ordinances oftentimes referred to as the Lincoln Yards TIF project. This is a project that has gotten lots of attention from the media, from my constituents, from constituents all over the city, and our fellow aldermen. And that is very good. That's democracy in action. When I first heard about this and when I became the acting chair, I was very concerned about the lack of affordable housing, and I asked to have a lot more. I demanded to have a lot more, and I am thankful that Alderman Hopkins pushed to double that. There were also a lot of other questions. These demands that I made were made 1 month ago, and great progress has been made. A lot of new information has come in recently, and there's still so much to digest, especially for a project that is this broad. And so, as acting chair, I will defer these two items.
No.
Order, please. Alderman Burnett.
So, actually, we haven't voted you in as chairman. Yeah. They put you here to run the meetings, but you're not the chairman. You don't run zoning in other people's wards. This is not your ward. I move that we vote on this item.
Wait just a minute.
Mr. Chairman.
With the understanding that people's testimony can take place, but I move that we vote on this item.
Jeff, let me hear from Jeff first. Jeff. If you cannot remain quiet, you will be escorted out. The freedom of speech is a very sacred thing for all of us in this chamber, and so that will be respected. Jeff.
Yeah. Good morning. Jeff Levine, Law Department. If just to clarify, Alderman Burnett, you're not suggesting that the committee immediately vote on the merits of the item itself right now. You are moving that a vote be taken today. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that motion is currently pending before the committee, and at this point, you could call for a vote on his motion.
Alderman Moreno.
Regardless on how people vote, I think a lot of people have time to come down here to testify. Shouldn't we hear people testify first?
So my understanding then is that with the motion that's made and seconded to allow a vote to occur.
He's taking a vote on the poll, is it correct?
Following all testimony.
Okay. Alderman Pouar.
To be clear, Mr. Chairman, didn't you put a motion on the table to defer these matters, correct?
No, I put a motion.
I said I would defer.
Defer what?
My experience serving as alderman and serving on committees is that when the acting chair asked to have a deferral, that deferral occurs. That's my experience. What I'm hearing from Jeff Levine.
So take a vote on as to whether or not we're going to vote.
Okay.
So that's what we're voting on right now, a vote to vote.
Okay.
We'll take a vote today.
Mr. Chairman, to be clear, and maybe Jeff can answer this, So there is no motion on the table right now that the chair made to defer these matters?
That's correct. Now, as a matter of customary practice, oftentimes a chair will indicate that an item is that their intention that an item be deferred. If that's not a motion, however, and if a member of the committee makes a motion that's contrary, then the motion comes before the body and needs to be acted upon.
So then I can also, then I'd like to put a motion on the table to defer.
So Robert's Rules of Orders requires me to follow first with this one. So it's been moved and seconded to allow a vote to occur on items 19767 and item 19768. All in favor?
So you're voting to vote right now.
You are voting to allow a vote to occur.
Yes.
Today. So, Alderman Moreno.
Doesn't your motion precede the other motion?
I said as acting chair, I will defer it.
Not a motion to defer.
Correct. Right now, the motion that stands is a vote to vote. So we're going to take the vote.
I just want to be clear, and I think the audience wants to be clear. So,
okay.
I mean.
Okay.
Do you want to do
so,
a
vote? All in favor of allowing a vote to occur, say aye.
Aye.
All not in favor, say nay.
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 So let's a roll call.
So let's do a roll call. We will do a roll call.
I guess I do the roll call. Okay. Roll call for the vote to vote.
Repeat the motion.
We are voting right now on a vote to vote. In favor, after testimony, in favor of voting, Alderman Moreno? Alderman Harris?
Aye.
Alderman Cardenas?
Nay.
Alderman Burke? Alderman Lopez?
Aye.
Alderman Folks? Alderman Moore?
Yes.
Alderman O'Shea?
Aye.
Alderman Brookins?
Aye.
Alderman Burnett?
Aye.
Alderman Mel? Alderman Austin?
Aye.
Alderman Lorino?
Aye.
Alderman Pouar?
No.
Alderman Kappelman?
No.
With 9 yeas and 4 nays, the ayes have it.
Okay. So then we will proceed.
Yeah.
So with that, then we will call council for items number 19767, Second Ward, ordinance referred 72518, common address 1300-1328 and 1301-1349 West Concord Place, 1624-1698 and 1653-1727 North Throop Street, 1696-1698, 1627-1649, and 1663-1699 North Ada Street, 1301 and to 1405 West Wabanzia Street. Change request is an M3-3 heavy industry district to C2-3 motor vehicle related commercial district, and then to a waterway residential business plan development, as well as item number 19768, Second Ward, ordinance referred 72518, common address 1306-1422 and 1301-1511 West Cortland Street, 1972-2076 North Kingsbury Street, 1952-2068 and 1953-2047 North Southport Avenue, 1401-1443 West Dickens Avenue, 1400-1430 and 1401-1427 West McLean Avenue, 2040-2068 and 2033-2077 North Dominick Street, 1801-1853 North Elston Avenue. Change request, M2-2 Light Industry District and M3-3 Heavy Industry District to a C2-3 Motor Vehicle Related Commercial District. Council.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Katie Janky Dale with the law firm of DLA Piper, and along with my colleague, Rich Clowder, we represent Fleet Portfolio LLC and Alloy Property Company LLC, the applicants for these matters. I'm joined today by various members of our development team. The two planned developments consist of approximately 54 acres, generally bounded by Webster on the north, Kingsbury and the Chicago River on the east, Concord on the south, and Elston on the west. Each PD allows for seven sub-area master plan development for a total of 14 sub-areas overall and a maximum of 6.28 FAR. The planned development, generally located north of the Chicago River, Lincoln Yards North, would allow for up to 3,500 units, and the planned development generally located south of the river, called Lincoln Yards South, would allow for up to 2,500 units. These items were considered and recommended for approval at the January 24th Plan Commission hearing. We would request that the committee incorporate the transcript of that hearing into the record.
Alderman Lopez moves to incorporate the records from the Plan Commission. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Then the chair, the ayes have it.
Thank you. Additionally, a second procedural matter. Each matter has a substitute ordinance, and we would request the committee accept those substitutes due to changes made since filing.
Alderman Lopez moves to accept the substitute. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And then your chair, the ayes have it.
Thank you again. Since the Plan Commission hearing, a number of changes have been made to these plan developments, which include the following: revising the ARO commitment to double the on-site affordable requirement and include incentives for larger family-sized units and partnerships with third-party affordable developers, including an ongoing reporting mechanism for traffic improvements made during implementation of the plan, and documenting the ongoing public review that will occur during site plan approvals moving forward. We appreciate the ongoing work and input from the aldermen, community, and affordable housing advocates in connection with these changes, and are proud of the outcomes. This is a transformative project for the city and developer. During the Plan Commission hearing, we heard extensive testimony from stakeholders regarding the applicant's M and WB commitment and program. I would like to have Shelley Burke from Sterling Bay briefly speak about that program. Shelley.
Good afternoon. I am Shelley Burke, Senior Counsel and Director of Community Engagement and Diversity Compliance at Sterling Bay. I'd like to take a minute to talk about Sterling Bay's commitment to diversity and inclusion and its business and hiring practices. This is an important issue for us as a firm, and to ensure our approach to diversity and inclusion is having the intended impact, Sterling Bay formed an advisory board consisting of executive directors of advocacy organizations that will advise on best practices for diversity and inclusion and assist in communicating Sterling Bay's procurement plan and upcoming bid opportunities to minority and women-owned businesses. We want to ensure a competitive process where MBEs and WBEs have the opportunities to serve as prime contractors, and we are strongly encouraging majority prime contractors to form joint ventures with MBEs and WBEs for the Lincoln Yards project. Further, we are partnering with various labor organizations to develop a best-in-class workforce development plan to assist in sustaining the careers of people of color and women who have historically been underrepresented in the construction workforce, and to provide the resources necessary to pursue a career in real estate construction, design, and development. Through this partnership, Sterling Bay will assist in removing barriers to entering the trades, provide educational resources, and training programs. We are sponsoring students through a corporate work-study program in Christ the King and Cristo Rey High School to help create the next generation of diverse workforce in the real estate development industry. These students will have the opportunity to work with Sterling Bay employees in the construction, property management, and asset management departments. An additional point I'd like to make as it relates to diversity and the staff at Sterling Bay. Like many other companies, we have a long way to go. Our staff is currently 55% women and 12% minority. We know we can do better, and in my role as Director of Community Engagement and Diversity and Compliance, I intend to make sure we improve our staff so that it's more reflective of the makeup of this city we call home. We are committed to this. Of the last three projects in Fulton Market, Sterling Bay spent $130 million total, of which over 30% was spent with MBEs and WBE firms. Further, Sterling Bay built a library in the West Loop and donated it to the city. 32% of the total construction costs for the West Loop Library were spent with MBEs and WBE firms. We are firmly committed to ensuring that minority and women-owned businesses have equitable participation in the Lincoln Yard development and create economic workforce opportunities for all of Chicago. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. This project has gone through an extensive community process spanning over 3 years, including meetings with hundreds of neighbors, many meetings with community groups and representatives, and two large and well-attended community-wide meetings. Our entire team is here and available to answer questions, and we respectfully request City Council approval of these substitute ordinances by this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Alderman Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to begin my remarks by acknowledging the opponents and the protesters that are here and to thank them, actually. We had a press conference earlier today, and through a scheduling problem, my press conference and their press conference were in a direct proximity to each other, and they gave me the courtesy of allowing me to have the press conference. They remained quiet and attentive until the very end, and then they did their thing and chanted and expressed their opposition. But that was a measure of courtesy that did not go unnoticed, and I thank you for that. Mr. Chairman, one of the questions that has been asked very frequently in the last couple of months on this matter is why the rush? And I'd like to answer that question now as part of my testimony by stating that from my perspective as the alderman of this process who has overseen it, it doesn't feel like a rush to me because we started this actually in May of 2016. That was the date that I had my first community meeting where we asked the question, what do you as a neighborhood want to see developed on the site of the former Finkel Steel plant? At the time, there was no such entity as Lincoln Yards. It didn't exist as a brand. It didn't exist as a concept. But we knew the land was for sale, and we knew that someone would buy it, and we knew that they would seek to develop it. And rather than wait for that to happen, I felt it was my responsibility to reach out to the community and to pose that question to them. DePaul University's graduate program hosted the meeting. We had nearly 300 people in attendance, and we got to work. We rolled up our sleeves, we sat down at tables. Each table was facilitated by a grad student in urban planning and design, and the community answered that question, what would you like to see going forward with development on that site? There were six recommendations that came out of that process. Number one, the community wanted to see the 606 bike trail expanded. Number two, the community wanted to see a new bridge constructed over the Chicago River with a north-south alignment. This site happens to be the only place on the entire north branch of the river where you could build a north-south bridge. Every other bridge is east-west. And that phenomena was identified at this design charrette and put forth as a community priority. The third question was to redesign the traffic control system throughout the area to have modern traffic control signals that can respond to existing real-time traffic conditions and help relieve some of the congestions that we deal with on a daily basis. The fourth, and this was unanimous, everyone who participated felt that a mixed-use development was the appropriate use of the site going forward. The fifth was a demand for a recreational park. As has been documented, we have a shortage of recreational park space in the area, and any proposal that was bringing new residents and new uses had to take that in mind, and we needed a new park of substantial size. And the sixth recommendation was for an enhancement of the river trail for both recreation and for aesthetics and for beautification. We needed to improve the river in this area, which is in a state of degradation after 150 years of industrial abuse. All six of those recommendations are contained in the Lincoln Yards plan before us today. So the process that started in 2016 led us to this point, and at every step of the way, we have had involvement from the neighborhood. I reached out to six different neighborhood associations at the very beginning, and I asked them to partner with me. I asked them to be a part of this process. I reached out to two citywide advocacy groups and gave them the same request. Would you be a part of this process? Attend all the community meetings, meet individually with the developer and give us your thoughts, your recommendations, and your suggestions. They agreed. Did we get everything that we wanted? No. But here's what we did get as a direct result of the community input that has occurred since this process began. Elimination of the 20,000-seat sports stadium, that was a demand from the residents in the neighborhood that knew we couldn't accommodate it. The type of traffic that that would generate from major events, soccer, concerts, and other things would overwhelm even the new infrastructure that was being planned as part of this. Elimination of the entertainment district for the same reason. There were at least two venues planned up to 10,000 seats apiece right around the soccer stadium. Same reason, we couldn't accommodate that additional traffic. Addition of a third bridge. When this plan was first put forth, there was only one bridge, the north-south alignment on Dominick Street that I mentioned. We added a second one, and now we've added a third bridge. There will be three new bridges across the Chicago River as part of this plan, and that is a result of a community that needs access to both sides of the river, and currently the conditions are such that it's a pretty much a 24/7 traffic jam trying to get across the river. The next thing that we changed was a prioritization of the reconstruction of the Armitage-Ashland-Elston intersection. That is currently in progress. It is currently in phase one design. CDOT has taken that on. They have heeded our call to move that up. It's a complex project. We recently did something similar at Damon and Fullerton and Elston, so we know how hard it is. That took 10 years. We can't take 10 years to do this, so we've started now, and that is in progress. We increased the recreational space. We now have an 11-acre park that's part of this project, which includes all the traditional things that a recreational park will have. I've asked the developer to expedite that project. We believe construction can start on that as soon as the weather allows, and there's going to be kids playing soccer in the new park this year. That's my prediction. We've also accepted a demand to have public oversight of that park. The ownership of that park is indetermined. Maybe Sterling Bay will own it in the future. Maybe the Park District will own it. We don't know yet, but we do know that it will operate substantially similar to any Chicago Park District park. That language is in the PD today. That is not a promise, ladies and gentlemen. That will be the law after this measure passes. This will be a publicly operated park, if not a publicly owned park. The next change, which was announced today, was a result in both the height and the density. Again, due to community demands, we've knocked down the density from 15 million square feet to 14.5 million. That's a 23-story building that we just took out of this plan. And we reduced the height. There will be nothing exceeding 600 feet. And that's down from the original proposal, which had 800-foot towers in it. As Chairman Kappelman mentioned, we've increased the number of on-site affordable units. We've doubled it from 300 to 600. And today, I announced that we will have an ongoing process of community review. Again, Mr. Chairman, when we first talked about this, you expressed a desire to have continued and enhanced community participation from all the stakeholders. We just put the language in this document now. This is unprecedented. We've never done this in the city before. Even after approval is granted today, this developer will have to come back for repeated community hearings and review from my neighborhood and from this body as we go forward to make sure every promise is kept, every pledge is adhered to, and everything they say they're going to do, they do on time and they do in the proper sequence. That is now mandated for them to move forward. Every one of these changes that I just outlined for you is a direct result of requests, comments, feedback, and input from that community review process. A community review process that doesn't involve any changes at all as a result of it is a waste of everyone's time. This was not only not a waste of everyone's time, this is one of the most productive community review processes that I have ever participated in. And I'm proud of it, and I'm proud of all the stakeholders that have been with me since day one. We're not done with this yet. Lincoln Yards as a development is at least a 10-year project. It's going to take that long to achieve this vision. I don't know if I'll be here in 10 years, but I know many of us will, and I know the organization, some of which are 50 years old, that have represented my community for that period of time, they will be here too. And we will make sure we get everything we've fought for and we've won, and we're not done yet. There's more things on the horizon, including the possibility of a bigger park that we can talk about as this process goes forward. As a result of all this, ladies and gentlemen, I feel very confident in supporting this, and I urge my colleagues on the Zoning Committee to grant us an aye vote today. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll hand it over to Commissioner Reifman.
Thank you, Chairman, member of the committee. It's my pleasure to be here today. I don't often come to zoning committee, but I am here specifically to request your support for the two plan development applications for Lincoln Yards, which represent more than 4 years of extensive community-based planning to transform this portion of the North Branch into an asset for the entire city. With 21st century jobs, critical transportation and infrastructure improvements, and with significant amounts of new open space. I will try to avoid repeating some of the things Alderman Hopkins said, but there, I think there are some points that bear repeating, and it really from the perspective of the city as a whole. And I want to start with an overview of the planning and engagement efforts that are poised to transform this site into one of the most vibrant mixed-use riverfronts in the entire country, with 24,000 permanent jobs, 10,000 construction jobs, with one of the most robust programs for minority and women business participation we have ever done, 1,200 affordable housing units, 20% of the total, and 21 acres of open space, including a new mile of Riverwalk. First, just a bit of background. One of my primary responsibilities when I was appointed commissioner was to modernize the city's outdated zoning regulations for planned manufacturing districts, which were no longer serving a productive purpose in transitioning industrial corridors like the North Branch. As you know, traditional industry had been leaving the North Branch for decades, which exacerbated other issues affecting its viability as a job center. It had a lack of modern infrastructure, significant physical impediments, environmental contamination, poor access, and other factors that served and continue to serve as a negative drain on the neighborhood and the entire city. The Department of Planning and the Department of Transportation worked with the community and area aldermen to reverse that trend. We worked with more than 800 participants to produce the North Branch Framework Plan, which was adopted by the Plan Commission in the spring of 2017 as a guide for future growth. And that framework contains three priorities directly driven by the community: to transform the North Branch to a 21st century citywide job center, to foster improvement for all modes of transit, and to build upon the area's unique man-made and natural environment. The framework also included new zoning recommendations, which this committee and the City Council approved in the summer of 2017, which strategically replaced portions of the PMD to enable land use transitions to this type of mixed-use project, which revitalized urban waterfront properties across the country, and the $6 billion development proposal before you today. With that background, Lincoln Yards itself has been a long time coming. The Alderman talked about ongoing engagement, which has included 60 community meetings month after month, year after year, with community stakeholders, various interest groups, and other concerned citizens. And just to understand the breadth of this, this was welcomed through direct public participation in planning studies, open houses, community meetings, online mapping tools, written submissions, public hearings, including before the Plan Commission and today, public surveys, and other opportunities that easily make Lincoln Yards one of the most scrutinized and publicly engaged private projects in the history of the city. The PD before you reflects that input, as do the recent changes the Alderman outlined, and a couple of these are worth repeating. Doubling the number of on-site affordable housing units from 300 to 600, while also providing up to 300 unit off-site within 3 miles in areas experiencing housing pricing pressure. This is a cutting-edge approach supported by the advocacy community that far exceeds the requirements of the ARO. It also includes other key provisions to address the city's affordable housing needs that are supported by the advocacy community as well, including a $39 million payment into the Affordable Housing Opportunity Fund to support very low-income families and affordable housing initiatives with a preference for projects within that 3-mile area, and potential credits for family-sized units in collaboration with nonprofit development projects that move this site forward. Alderman Hopkins already detailed some of the changes to the plan itself, so I won't repeat those. And the open space, which is 40% of the site, far exceeds the open space recommendations of the North Branch Framework Plan. These modifications are significant, and they were not lost on the editorial boards at the Tribune and Cranes, which endorsed this project this week, saying it is vital for Chicago's future. Now, I want to mention two more aspects of how this project will help the city. First, we developed, in connection with planned manufacturing districts, a new industrial corridor system fee, which will generate almost $60 million for industrial projects citywide. In other words, when we're taking traditional industry away from one part of the city. We are creating resources for it to be used anywhere in the other industrial corridors that we have in Chicago. And we have 25 other industrial corridors that can benefit from this. And from an infrastructure perspective, and there's been a lot of talk about TIF will be the subject of future meetings, Sterling Bay will be funding approximately $300 million in public roads, traffic signals, and other infrastructure with no public assistance, specifically for projects that primarily benefit the people on the site. These are essentially the local improvements and the type we expect all developers to pay for their planned developments. And that additional infrastructure, which the alderman talked about as well, new bridges at Armitage, Dominic, and Concord, reconstruction of the Ashland-Armitage-Elston intersection, reconstruction of portions of street, and other future projects. But to conclude, I want to reinforce how essential this project is to the future of Chicago and our ability to attract development, jobs, and investment in an extremely competitive global economy. Sites of this size that are close to downtown, near public transit, with urban authenticity and natural resources are rare among U.S. cities that have a global influence. These opportunities don't exist in New York, San Francisco, Philadelphia, or Boston like we have, and a site like this is one of the main reasons why Chicago was so competitive for the Amazon bid. These sites are absolutely critical as we consider our fiscal issues and our need to grow our tax base without increasing the burden on existing residents and businesses. Especially when you consider the section of the North Branch today. In essence, there are zero jobs, zero market rate housing, zero affordable housing, no public park space, no public riverfront access, nothing for the industrial corridor system, nothing for the North Branch bonus, nothing for MWBE participation, and nothing for our tax base. And I'll wrap up by more explicitly referencing the perceptions of the editorial boards at Tribune and Crane's. The Tribune said, quote, "Improvements to the Lincoln Yards plan happened because the community insisted on those changes, and Sterling Bay and City Hall responded, growth always works best when it's girded by the symbols of developer, city, and community. If Chicago ever squanders its reputation as a reliable place to invest, then those billions of dollars and those jobs will find other homes in other American cities." And Crane said, "Today's vote is about more than Lincoln Yards." Crane's quotes, "A setback for Lincoln Yards would send a powerful and negative message at precisely the wrong time to the real estate developers, major employers, and deep-pocketed investors who have helped Chicago compete for headquarters and major corporate outposts and whose continued interest in Chicago are vital to the city and the state's efforts to pull back from the economic brink," unquote. Alderman, we cannot make the significant improvements to neighborhoods across Chicago, all of Chicago, without the economic engines that make sites like Lincoln Yards, the 78, the Tribune Properties, and Michael Reese, what those sites represent. Today, we have deep-seated challenges we face as a city, and we're trying to address those with things like a progressive income tax, which the mayor supports, minimum wage standards, which the mayor supports, pension payments, which will be coming due this year, and many other complex economic and fiscal issues. Pension funds, insurance companies, institutions, and other investors who are the key to solving these issues with us are looking at what we're doing here today with a site like this and assessing whether Chicago continues to be a good place to invest. Both labor and business support Lincoln Yards, which is a rare but deserving testimony to the overwhelming public engagement that has transpired to refine its scope and its potential impact on the city's goals and needs. The entire city needs this project for now and for years to come. I would urge your favorable vote on the matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We will now begin with input from aldermen who are on the zoning committee, and after that, aldermen who are not on the zoning committee are also welcome to speak. So I'll start with Alderman Austin, Chairman Austin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. I want to first start off by saying congratulating Alderman Hopkins. You've paved the way for us that do have industrial PDs still left in the city. It was a yeoman's job, but I'm glad you started it. For as long as it has taken you with this project, my thought was always going back to, will we have to do the same? It will not be as intensified as yours, but I'm glad you did it first. But this is a project that I wish that I could pick up and put in my area, or if nothing else but portions of it. You started in the right way, and that is with your community. When you start with your community, you come out with a project such as this. Those are your stakeholders. We are here to vote upon your project, but we're voting upon what they have decided. And that's where the rubber meets the road, because you've had 60 meetings. That's quite a few meetings. More than some of us do participate, but to have 60, because you want to know from every resident, what is it that you want? Your design bill, all of this is just absolutely fabulous. You've had asked every question that could possibly be asked of your residents for this project. But the first one was, what do you want? And that's the best question that you could have asked them. What is it that you want to see? All of these things have occurred because of your patience and the love for your community. And that's what's most important. But I do have a question for the attorney. I forgot your name. Now, you stated in regards to a large number of MBEs and WBEs, who are these firms? Because a lot of times you all come before us and you tell us how many you have, but you never give us a name. I need to know some names.
We haven't picked the GC yet for these projects, but some of the MBE firms that we have been working with have been Millhouse Engineering, which is an African-American MBE firm, David Mason, an African-American MBE firm, Singh & Associates, which is an Asian MBE firm, Sanchez & Associates, which is a Latino MBE firm, GSG, which is also a Hispanic MBE firm, to name a few.
Okay, through the chair, could you give us a listing of who these firms are and your professional services besides yourselves?
Yes, several of those are professional services. Yes. Many of those are architects
All
or
right.
engineers or geotechnical.
Yes. Well, I would like to have a list of that through the chair.
Sure.
So that we can make sure that those firms are really operating in this large project, because if somebody have been changed going down the line, we need to know that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Not a problem.
But again, Alderman Hopkins, I think that you have done a yeoman's job, and I'm hoping that the committee will see where you've done that, because some of us that do have those corridors need to know that this type of project can work in other parts of the city. As I have been talking with Commissioner Reifman several times in regards to the far south side, because for something such as this, we need it on the far south side as well. Maybe not a project as large and in depth, but in the same line of it. And since you've already paved the way, I'll make sure that I follow your lead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you. Point of information?
The item that the Chairman Austin requested, make sure that the entire committee gets it before the vote at council.
Thank you. Yes, that will occur.
Thank you.
Alderman Brookins.
When Austin asked my question, I'll pass. No need to delay in this.
Thank you. Alderman Moreno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a Planning Commission Reifman there. Since we went a little bit off of zoning, I just want to go a tad off of zoning on this project, because there's another vote next week on the TIF. And it's going to be too late for my question to be asked there, so I could ask it behind chambers, but I think in public it's better. I think a model for the TIF for this should be looked at Lathrop Homes, which is not too far away. And what we did there, working with the city, and I believe it's the first time we've ever done a TIF like this. One of the biggest criticisms of TIF, there are many, but one of the biggest is that a TIF is created and the dollar amount that's said to be raised is then increased beyond that, which creates a quote-unquote slush fund that is then used for other projects. And so what we did is, we allowed for that TIF to sunset at the amount of money that was said needed to be raised for infrastructure. So not only does it sunset at a time frame, but it sunsets either at the time frame comes first or the amount of money. And I think that would go a long way, at least in the public that has reached out to me in saying that this is not just created for a larger TIF to do things in parts of the city like other TIFs in the past have done. So I just wanted that on the record, even though this is a zoning committee, but we did go a little bit off of zoning, so thought it fair that I could be, go off as well, and wanted on that on the record. And also, and I'll ask this offline, but I'm assuming that this is strictly for infrastructure and affordable housing. Lathrop Homes has 66%. I know this has 10, 15%, but those are the only things that those could be used for, and they're in the TIF. They're not just handwritten or handshake. So I just wanted that on the record because I think that those things are important in moving our city forward, because TIF was created decades ago for the right reason and then was abused over the many decades. And I just think that if those instruments and those items were within this, it would alleviate some, not all, but alleviate some in their trust of how TIFs work in our city and what they're supposed to work for.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
And there are certainly pros and cons. I have a Wilson Yard TIF, and I added on another project, spending, I think, $3 million for Sarah Circle to build a women's homeless shelter and 38 units of affordable housing. So, yeah, there's pros and cons to this, but I certainly understand that. Alderman Pouwar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to, before I register my opposition, what I want to say before that is, I believe in density, and I believe in significant amounts of density to create new housing options across the spectrum. I believe that if we are committed to building true mixed income developments, that those types of developments should receive subsidies. Having said that, I also recognize that for organized labor, this is an incredible project, and this will create lots of jobs. The opposition that I have is the one that's been consistent that I've been raising for a few years, going back to the last rework of the Affordable Housing Requirements Ordinance and the task force that I sat on. I was a member of that task force, and in numerous task force meetings, I brought up a loophole that needed to be closed. That loophole is, if there is a zoning change that does not receive public subsidies, the requirement is to build to have 10% affordable set aside, whether you build on site or you pay out. When you subsidize that development with public dollars, the requirement goes up to 20%. In most developments, you have the option of either building on site or paying out per unit. When you provide a public subsidy and the requirement goes up to 20%, we shouldn't be allowing developers to pay out from building on site. And here's why. And I brought this up 5 years ago, which is, if we are incentivizing development and then the development entity is allowed to pay out, it appears as though we are getting paid back with our own money. That is a problem. So I understand that they have now doubled the number of housing units that they will build on site from 300 to 600, but as the deal is currently being discussed, the requirement would be 1,200 units. And I understand that they're planning on building more units off-site, but this goes back to the other conversation that we have in this city over and over again when we talk about affordable housing, is if it's tied to zoning, meaning you need to upzone to allow for the construction of those units on-site, then we're back to the same community conversations that get repeated over and over again, not just in this city but across the country, where affordable housing comes up and pitchforks come out. And if we're saying that we want to build off-site and segregate those units from this development off-site, what message does it send to the people who are going to be asked to make a zoning change in their communities because we wouldn't build on-site on this deal? So I We have legislation sitting in committee right now that was introduced by myself and Alderman Moreno, and I don't remember how many sponsors, but I think we had a near majority or a small majority of city council that would close that loophole. That would require 20% to be built on site when there is a public subsidy. I think the argument is going to be made that these are different buckets of dollars and that we're not really paying ourselves back with our own money. But, you know, in many ways, the performers that we are shown is a spreadsheet. And we can manipulate those to make it look like what we want to look like, to make a deal work or not pencil out. I believe this loophole should be closed. This is part and a major reason why I'm opposed to this, is not the density, it's not the infrastructure, it's the fact that we aren't building the amount of affordable housing units that we should be building, and there's a loophole that allows developers to buy out. The second piece, which is troubling, is having worked on other TIF projects in my own ward, when we built a school addition at Coonley Elementary, it was $16 million. But the TIF didn't have the $16 million in it, so we went out and financed it, right? And so the cost of the addition went from like $16 million to like $18 or $19 million because of interest expenses. At the end of the day, it was public infrastructure, and it was, I believe, that was money well spent. On this project, we are reimbursing the developer for the infrastructure that they are building on behalf of the city of Chicago, but we are reimbursing that with interest, and there isn't or hasn't been any details about what the interest rate is. I think reimbursing those dollars plus interest also likely changes their investment returns. And so they're making money in other places. So the idea that we couldn't build more affordable housing on site, it doesn't sit well with me, and it doesn't make sense. So I want to close by saying I think we had a real missed opportunity, because I think on developments of this scale, we should require 30, 25, 35, 40% affordable. And the CHA just last year announced the Opportunity Area Program, which would make this deal even more profitable and create more affordable housing units on site that currently don't exist, because the CHA Opportunity Area Program is a project-based Section 8 program, and they, on paper, say they would pay 150% of market rate rents to have affordable housing on site. So in normal deals, banks look at these deals as rent control for whatever the portion of the affordable units are, and they look at that unfavorably, and then sometimes the deals don't pencil out, and then developers say, well, we can't build this many affordable units on site because the banks won't finance it. But in this scenario, if we'd required project-based Section 8, it's not rent control, because you're getting 150%, up to 150% of market rate rents. So we could require even more affordable. And I think we had an opportunity here to build a large mixed-income community, one that hasn't been built in this country in a very long time. And I think that is the missed opportunity. That is my opposition. I believe large mixed-income deals should receive subsidies. That is exactly how these deals should go. But when we are allowing these loopholes to persist for years on end, when it was brought to everyone's attention, I think we missed a mark here, and that's why I'll be voting no. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I'm going to call on Commissioner Reifman again, and then, Commissioner, could you, there's lots of discussions about on-site versus off-site housing, and then there's lots of confusion. Could you also clarify that as well?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First,
if you'll have to leave if you cannot respect freedom of speech. You're on the list. Let me see.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. So first, Alderman Moreno, to your questions, we are not, there is no vote on TIF before City Council. That will be introduced, but there's no vote on TIF right now. So there's, I don't want to make sure you understand that there's nothing coming before City Council to vote on TIF next week. And this particular, just to clarify in response to your question, it does follow the model of what you did at Lathrop by limiting the TIF expenditures to public improvements and affordable housing and those types of issues. In fact, that will come before the council in an amended form, but it is very limited, and there is a set budget which can't be changed without a full amendment of the plan. So those elements that you discussed in your proposal are comparable here for those things. Secondly, I want to point out, and I appreciate your position, Alderman Poir, but these improve the TIF in this particular case is not a subsidy to the developer. It is resources generated by the development for public improvements in the region, and we can review that specifically in connection when this comes back before council for TIF. It is bridges, it is roads, it is the Armitage-Elston-Ashland intersection. These are not specific to a kind of developer project that I think your analysis suggests. It's not to fund any specific project. Now, as to the affordability, Mr. Chairman, what would you like me to clarify exactly?
The difference on the AMI for on-site versus off-site.
So in the case of the normal AR, with the ARO for a straight zoning change, the requirement is 10%, of which 25% must be provided on-site or within 2 miles. There's no on-site requirement, and the AMI for that is 60%. When TIF is involved with 20%, the AMI shifts, and half of those units have to be at 50% AMI, area median income, or below. Now, what I would tell the committee to consider here, that when we have this amount of on-site and off-site, those AMI factors will be respected. But because there is, and I appreciate Alderman Poir's position, but we're limiting some of the offsite to within 3 miles. So the other neighborhoods that may be experiencing price pressure also get affordable units in the vicinity of Lincoln Yards, not just on Lincoln Yards. And finally, what I would say is that because there are payments, there are monies that go to people with 30% AMI and below. So more segments of our population and our low and very low income population benefit from the affordable housing resources that this project generates. And there, the Low Income Housing Trust Fund intends to consider preferencing units within that same 3 mile area so that the area of concerns about segregation, we offset that concern with the way this has been structured. I would just finally say, I know that there have been numerous advocates who have submitted letters to you, Chairman. I don't know if you want to make those available or read their names, but just so you're aware, we have presented this to a significant segment of the advocacy community. Thank you.
Thank you, and I will read those letters now. The Illinois Housing Council, the Resurrection Project, the Enterprise Community Partners, Chicago Neighborhood Initiatives, Chicago Metropolitan Housing Development Corporation, the Chicago Community Loan Fund, Brenshore, the Preservation of Affordable Housing, and the Chicago Low Income Housing Trust Fund have all sent in letters of support for this ordinance. With that, Alderman Cardenas.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. And, you know, I'm a no on this project, and I'll tell you why. Some of my colleagues have alluded to for their reasons. For me, this is just simply not cooked yet. And I hate to go back to when I was an apprentice for a chef. And I kept trying to bake a pie, try to put it back in the oven, take it out, poke at it, then do it again and see if it's cooked yet. And that's when you know that you don't know what the hell you're doing. And this is similarity in terms of what has happened, tweaking it to please a myriad of interest. Every time we say, well, I'm not really comfortable with that, goes back to the drawing board, well, don't worry, we'll cut the size from 650 to 630, whatever it may be, to appease somebody. We'll do the affordable housing, we'll give you a couple hundred more units just to pacify your particular case. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really muster up to what it should be, which is my colleague Poir alluded to, a full-fledged affordable housing plan. So that's just on the zoning side. If you look at, we're teeing it up for the TIF, what amounts to $1.3 billion, and with all respect to my colleagues, as we can't wait 10 years, hell, I waited 10 years for Little Village Park just on phase one. And that was only $16 million. 10 years. And I had to get money from the state, had to get money from the park district, from the city. Everybody pitched in. Here we're asking taxpayers to front the whole full bill for this project. Where's the state? Where's their money at? Where's the federal government? Where's their money at? You're talking about metro stations, you got bridges, road improvements, 606 extension, partial. I mean, there's a lot of improvements here that are no doubt are needed from a regional standpoint. But the Fed's got to be in on this, and the state has to be in on this as well. So this is critical. It's one and two, is the zoning and the TIF. They go hand in hand. And in fact, the presentation that I was given, that's what it says. Zoning and tax increment financing. It does not separate them. It's all in one. Look, we can debate on the merits. This is not cooked yet. Thank you.
Thank you. Alderman Lorino.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment that I think we'll have ample opportunity to discuss TIF issues in the future, and I would appreciate it if our colleagues could keep this related to the zoning issue, but once again, the TIF issue is going to come up, and that's not happening today. That will be in the future, and today is a zoning issue. And I think that the Commissioner Reifman actually did address that issue, so thank you.
Thank you. Alderman Lopez.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. I want to first off commend my colleague Alderman Hopkins and others who are standing in support of this. I too am in support of this project. But I also want to touch on the fact that in the 3+ years that we've seen this project evolve, as Alderman Hopkins has mentioned, we've seen the goalposts keep moving every time this project gets discussed. First, it was issues of density, which was resolved. Then it became an issue of green space, which was resolved. Then it became an issue of affordability, which was resolved. Then it became an issue of TIFs, which was resolved. And just right now, we heard now it's an issue of on-site housing changes that should impact the entire city, and why don't they apply here? We can't keep changing the goalpost and hope that we're someday going to score a touchdown. That's not how it works. We have a project that's going to create 10,000 construction jobs just for this project alone. 24,000 permanent jobs. Those are people in my neighborhood on the southwest side of Chicago. Those are African Americans, Latinos, members of the trades, people who are in desperate need of opportunities to work. And it's very conspicuous that people are standing in opposition saying, no, we can keep waiting. Those neighborhoods can't keep waiting. The money that we keep hearing that's being stolen in TIF doesn't even exist. Yeah. Okay. Because right now what we really have is a plot of dirt that makes no money for anybody. The TIF that's going to be created comes from the buildings that are created by the people that we've put to work to build them. And to keep saying no is an insult to everybody that I represent on the southwest side in neighborhoods like West Englewood, neighborhoods like Brighton Park, Back of the Yards and Gage Park, where we have people in those trades waiting to start building. This city has a legacy of having historic numbers of buildings being built. And those skyscrapers that we see benefit communities like mine through the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, the Retail Thrive Zone, and other avenues such as that, as well as the Industrial Corridor, which the commissioner spoke about. You want to lay a brick on that to help communities like mine, to help communities like Chairman Austin's? No way. No how. Because I'm not going to go back to my communities and say, you know what, we had a chance to help put resources and dollars and to help lighten your tax burden by creating more taxable PIN numbers in the city of Chicago simply because of arguments that didn't exist, arguments that weren't real. And I'm happy to defend that because my people can see through this smokescreen. My residents can see through this. And they are waiting for the opportunity to join the ranks of everyone else to keep building Chicago, whether it's here or at the next project in Carrie Austin's ward or in the projects coming my way. And I urge all of my committee members to vote in support. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. There are two other letters of support that I need to add. One from the Community Investment Corporation and also from the Neighborhood Housing Services of Chicago Incorporated. Alderman Burnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. First of all, I'd like to take this opportunity to commend Alderman Hopkins. I also like to commend Alderman Smith. Alderman Smith really pushed the envelope on green space, and Alderman Hopkins worked with her on increasing the green space in this area, so both of you all should be commended for that for the people that live in this community. But I also want to take this opportunity because, you know, being on the Plan Commission, we voted for this initially, and then it was asked my advice on what we should do as far as the affordable housing is concerned. And I mentioned to some of the parties that I think it would be great if it went up to 10%, at least 10% on site. And I just want to commend the developer and everyone involved for doing so. I think that's fantastic. That's going to be, 600 on-site units of affordable housing. Maybe it's not as affordable as people would like it to be, but those are some things that can be worked on. And then there's 300 other units that's going to go within 3 miles. Of course, as I said at the Plan Commission meeting, I hope that this would help me to fill in some of the vacant lots on the west side of my ward where I don't have any development. And we can take some of those units and build on it. Matter of fact, I actually was just on tour with someone from the developer to look at some different type of housing that can be built on these sites throughout the city of Chicago. And so I appreciate them really looking into it. This organization, Sterling Bay, has always been a stand-up organization. They put their money where their mouth is. I mean, they gave us a free library over in the West Loop, which I thought was great. The money that's going to be spent on the infrastructure is like we're getting a bond from Sterling Bay to build the infrastructure. And then after their buildings is built, the tax dollars go back to pay for it, basically. So this is a front-loaded situation where they fronting the money to build the infrastructure, which is the millions of dollars that's going to be spent. It's coming out of their pocket to give us infrastructure in the city that we need. And it's unfortunate and I know that transportation and planning kind of worked that out, because it's unfortunate that, one, we don't have that kind of money up front, but two, that we're not getting it from the federal government, nor are we getting it from the state at this time. So we have to do what we have to do, and this is going to open up that area for people all over the city of Chicago. I mean, this is fantastic. And then I would be remiss if I did not speak about this organization and the minority contractors that they have hired in my ward. They built the Google building, the McDonald's building, and several other structures in my ward, and we have several minority contractors working on those developments. This is a great organization. They keep their word. They care about the city. They put their money where their mouths are, and I think it's fantastic. And then I didn't even mention the $39 million. The $39 million that's going to go to the Affordable Housing Opportunity Fund is going to subsidize affordable housing across the city in most of our wards. We have developments in our wards that need money every year. They're not getting the money from the state, from the federal government. They try to get it from the city, and the city is constantly running out of money. This $39 million is going to go a long way to help to sustain very low-income housing. We're not even talking about affordable housing. We're talking about low-income housing in all of our wards, which is needed. The city gets mad at me because I try to get all the affordable housing built in my ward. They'd rather have the money to help subsidize these projects Well, this is a way to get the money to help subsidize those projects and stop trying to take my money from the affordable housing that I'm trying to get built in my ward. So I'm happy. I'm happy about that. That's $39 million that's going to go to subsidize not affordable housing. We're talking about 30% of median income, 60% of median income, very low affordable housing throughout the city of Chicago. So this is a win-win situation. We get a whole brand new community, free infrastructure that gets paid for down the road from tax dollars that's not even there right now, that's going to come in the future because of this development, and an opportunity to attract more people to the city of Chicago, and thousands of jobs. I mean, 10,000 construction jobs. I mean, 24,000 permanent jobs. I mean, this is fantastic. This is something that needs to happen before we get this transition and people worried about everything else. We need to put these things in place so they can continue on, so that economic development and all of those things, people working, is still going on, so the city can continue to move regardless of the transition that's getting ready to happen. I think this is a great thing. I support it 100%. If we were able to get 50%, 100% affordable housing, I'd be on board too, right? But we got 10% on site, 5% around the city, and another 5% to support affordable housing throughout the city of Chicago. This is more affordable housing that has come out of, this would be more affordable housing projects that have come out of this administration in a long time. I think this is great. I stand by 100%. I commend the developers, commend planning, commend transportation, commend the aldermen, commend everybody that's involved of the great job that they did, even Alderman Smith. Alderman Smith, I know she was getting on my nerves, and she showed, I know she got on Alderman Hopkins' nerve pushing for green space in his ward that's not her ward, right? But he did it for her. He did it because she pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, and he added more green space. So I just commend everyone that's involved, and congratulations, and we should vote on this, get it over with, so things can continue to move in the city of Chicago, even after Rahm Emanuel is gone. Thank you.
Thank you. Alderman Harris.
Good afternoon, everybody. Alderman Hopkins, I really want to say thank you for your commitment to your community, for working with your community, and listening to your community. Because you don't get to compromise if you're not listening. There's nothing to compromise if you're not listening. So I appreciate you for taking the time to have the litany of meetings that you had with your community to hear and to listen to the voices. And so that's what you do as a good alderman. You listen to your community, and then you say, I'm not going to have it all my way, and you compromise a little bit. And so you see all the compromises in this project, and you see again, Alderman Hopkins' willingness to listen to the community and make those compromises to make it a better development so that it works for everybody. Finally, I want to thank him for creating the resources, Alderman Hopkins, for the industrial corridor. Again, for those of us on the south side, we're trying to make sure our industrial corridor survive. And so we always appreciate the ability to create resources that are going to help communities that need the additional resources. So Commissioner Reifman, I want to thank him for putting that in. At the end of the day, you do the best you can, knowing that the people that are going to work with you are going to work with you, and the people that aren't going to work with you aren't going to work with you, and you're just not going to be able to make everybody happy. So you're going to create a project that will make the majority of the people happy in your community, and you create the compromises that make it work for most of the people. Again, Alderman, thank you again for your commitment. And these kind of events are really tough. And when I say that, it's tough to sit in the seat and have people throw things at you and say things at you. It's tough, and just because you're an alderman doesn't make it any easier to sit down in that seat and be ripped to pieces and be ripped to shreds when you're trying to do something that you know will recreate vacant property. in your community. So again, thank you for everything that you do, and thank you for your commitment and your toughness. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other members of the Zoning Committee? Alderman David Moore.
Thank you. I would like to address, and Ms. Shelley Burke is already down there. If Andy Glore can come down to the front as well, that would be helpful, so I can ask some questions, please. Andy is Sterling Bay's Managing Principal, and Shelley Burke is Sterling Bay's Senior Counsel and Director of Community Engagement and Diversity Compliance. As he's coming down, I know we ask for the information about the chairman, Austin did, about the vendors, about the contractors, and somebody said that list would be provided, and I said if we can do it before City Council. However, we got a whole bunch of testimony that got to take place here, and I think with technology today, I'm hoping somebody at Sterling Bay can reach back to their people at their office and get this that information to us before this committee takes the vote. That shouldn't be an issue at all in terms of the African-American contractors that they said they have. So I'll ask for someone at Sterling Bay to make that call. For me, I'm not all googly-eyed over this project, and neither am I down on it. There's a middle road here somewhere, and that's the way I am right now. Today, right now, believe it or not, I don't even know if I'm going to say yes or no, but I think we needed to take a vote for this. And with that said, as I'm working with Department of Planning to resolve some issues, the administration to resolve some issues, I'm hoping that we can get there and do something where we can benefit the residents of our city. First of all, Andy, according to your website, you've been with Sterling Bay since 2002. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What is the estimated total acquisition and development veil of SB's Sterling Bay's projects during that period here in the Chicago?
Total transaction value?
Yes.
I don't have it off the top of my head, but I would say it's in the neighborhood of $3 or $4 billion.
$3 to $4 billion? Okay. And Shelley, how long have you been with Sterling Bay?
A little over 5.5 years.
Okay. And I would imagine you would agree that this process for Lincoln Yards approval is different than all the other projects you've been involved in, correct?
That's a fair yes statement.
So for the past 17 years of developing and acquiring real estate here in Chicago, Andy, and you said about $3 billion worth of projects, you've been able to execute your strategy without this type of pressure, correct?
What's that again?
Have you been able to execute your strategies and developments with those $3 billion on those projects with this, without this type of pressure that you're having today?
Yeah, we've been able to execute on that. Yep.
And please explain to me why after 17 years and about $3 to $4 billion worth of business, you decided now to revamp the Sterling Bay website site and present a very different perception of your workforce. Let me reiterate on that. After your team visited with me a few weeks ago, I perused your website and I found the senior management link very interesting. It looked more like this to me. Okay? Now as today, and I understand that you're evolving almost daily, and you no longer have a link to your senior management, but today the website looks like this, with 6 new faces of all women. You have an African-American on there. And so those are the things that concern me. Explain to me why the change at this time.
The change is the jobs were there. The roles are the same. You know, reformatting doesn't change the fact that these people have worked at Sterling Bay for many, many years.
Okay.
And if you look at the different people on the website, they do run and control and are the most senior individual with that particular expertise. That has not changed.
Okay. So you understand that's why it's, for me, important, and seeing that Shelley is the only African-American on this, these pictures and at this table, that it's important that anytime Sterling Bay is at the table, that she be at the table, and that she have a great role in everything that you all are doing on all these projects?
She has, and she'll continue to be, yes.
Okay. Now, Shelley, when you visited with me a few weeks ago, your card stated council. Now it appears you have an additional title of community engagement and diversity. Is that correct, and compliance?
That is correct, that I have a new title. As we have gone forward with Lincoln Yards, it has been very important for me that I take an additional role here at Sterling Bay to ensure that there is equitable participation for minorities as well as women-owned businesses. I have been in speaking with Andy and Dean about increasing my role at Sterling Bay, and this project is definitely the time for me to have the opportunity to do so, and I do not have any doubts that I will not be a great part and a great asset to the community to make sure that Lincoln Yards is a win for all of Chicago.
Thank you. I'm glad you stated that, and I'm glad you stated it emphatically, and that's why it's important, Andy, that she's at the table. Andy, I understand that there's been significant more outreach by Sterling Bay to minority contractors, like we're asking for this list, professional service firms, vendors, et cetera. Since this $6 billion Lincoln Yard project has dominated the news very recently, however, it appears that there wasn't the same level of commitment on SB projects over the previous 17 years of the $3 to $4 billion you're talking about. Why is that?
I respectfully disagree with that. This is something that we've consistently done on all of our projects in Chicago, and I'm happy to provide you specifics if that's what you want.
Please, thank you so much and for comparisons. And Shirley, I think you already stated that you've, how many new firms, minority firms, have you said you engaged with the past few weeks with the hopes of getting Lincoln Yards approval?
I do not have the extensive list in front of me, but we have engaged with several, and I'll be sure that we provide you a list that gives you all the firms that we've engaged so far.
Do you have an estimate number by any chance?
So far for Lincoln Yards, we've only completed about 1% of the total amount of work that needs to be done. Of that 1%, 15% of that has been MBE. We're going to make sure that increases, that it would at the very least meet the minimum, but we do plan to exceed the minimum required.
And the minority firms that you engage with, what have they received? What feedback have you received from them? Their conversations, their successes, or their challenges? What feedback have you received from them?
So, since this project has just started, as far as what we've done so far at Lincoln Yards, I haven't received a ton of feedback yet. But I know that they are looking to work with us, and so far, it seems that they've had a great experience.
Okay. Both Andy and Shelley, I really want you all to look at this body across in the zoning department who's representing the people here in the zoning committee. This body in front of you, pay close attention because it's a diversity group amongst us. And this is a very important body, well represented by every group and geography in this city. But yet we are being asked, and in some cases pressured, to approve a project by a developer that hadn't historically, but he said he has, and he'll prove it to me, that I feel have embraced that same philosophy that makes Chicago very special. Therefore, I'm having difficult understanding why now this whole new epiphany. And during that epiphany, I hope you can come to the realization that the pressure that you felt the past few months has somehow guided you toward correcting the way Sterling Bay does business in Chicago, meaning we must have diversity at all levels, not only on the projects, but within the company as well. But it must be more outreach to minority contractors, Shelley, and I trust that you're going to do that. Increasing affordable housing units, I think that's been addressed. And I think we must just continue to make sure that we have the racial diversity. Please don't forget, there's going to be a new sheriff in town, and that new sheriff is going to be an African-American female, and that takes over this body in about 2 months, looking very different from what this sheet looks like. And trust me, we want to make sure that we, or Sterling Bay, is making sure that diversity is there. I'll close with this statement. As your team tallies the yeas and the nays, keep in mind we voted how we voted, and hopefully we'll learn to understand this body represents all of Chicago. And if we decide when you decide to pull your heads from the guillotine and work with you to correct the problems of this past, we're doing Chicago communities of residents from across the city. I hope Sterling Bay adopts the same philosophy within their company. As I continue to hear the testimony, based on what I've heard so far, I think the mayor, let me say this, and I'm going to be short, because I'll save more of this probably for city council. I think the mayor has been working to do a wonderful job in helping find ways to get the South and West Side communities developed. And as we try to do that, that's what's important to me. I think Alderman Burnett stated it with the dollars from the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund that can really help our communities develop, because we're always asking people to come to our communities. I know the mayor has done that, but this is not a Jewel, or this is not a Dominix that the mayor can say, if you don't build on the South Side or if you don't build on the West Side, then I don't want you to, you know, you're not going to get downtown. That's not one of these situations. And so as much as I would want it to be one of those situations, we cannot turn this away right now like we could do a Dominic or a Jewel. And so I'm going to continue to listen to the testimony here, and I'm hoping I can vote yes for this, because based on the research that I've done, it feels like a good project, but I have some outstanding concerns that's being addressed by the administration at this time, and I'm hoping I can vote yes for this. So thank you so much, both Shelley, for your time, for your commitment, and Andy, thank you for wanting to bring this project to Chicago. And we've had a conversation outside, and you're seeming like you're willing to do everything from a diversity standpoint to make things better, and I'm going to take you on your word for that, and I'm hoping I can vote yes on this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to have about 80 people also providing testimony, and we also have aldermen providing testimony. I strongly encourage you, please do not repeat something that's being said. I want to be out before 6 p.m. Today, 6 p.m. All right. Alderman Carlos Rosa.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm not a member of this committee, but thank you for affording me the opportunity to address this matter. You know, I think it's pretty interesting if we listen to the testimonies in support of this enormous and unprecedented upzoning, you would think that Sterling Bay has an altruistic purpose. That the reason that they exist is a seemingly a nonprofit venture to create jobs, to create a park, to build affordable housing. But we know that that's not why Sterling Bay exists. We know that's why people don't enter the market of development. They exist to maximize their profits, right? And they exist to maximize their profit through building housing, right, which is a fundamental human need. And I'm not going to comment or remark upon greed or on the morality of profiteering off of a fundamental human need such as housing. I will leave that up to, you know, the people that work in that and their God. But what I will say is that our job as a council and as a body is not to maximize Sterling Bay's profits. Our job as a council and as a body is to get the best deal for the taxpayers, is to do all those altruistic things that we have been talking about here, to ensure that people have housing, to ensure people have parks, to ensure people have schools, to ensure people have infrastructure. And so the reason why we are here talking about the TIF in relation to this upzone is because this unprecedented and enormous upzoning has a value, right? We are granting the developers something that is going to allow them to make a lot of money. And by also then giving them this TIF, right, which will follow this upzone, we are then doing their job for them very well, right? We're maximizing their profits. And I'm not convinced that this is the best deal for the taxpayers. I haven't seen a spreadsheet. I haven't seen, a rundown of how much money Sterling Bay expects to make off of this project and what happens if they have to, you know, pay the bill to build the infrastructure that's necessary for their project. Can someone tell me that, right? Because that is fundamentally the question that's at play here, right? Yes, let's have Sterling Bay move forward with this project, right? Let's have them create, you know, the 6,000 units of luxury housing. Let's have them create those jobs. Let's have them put the trades to work. Let's have them build that park. But let's ask that fundamental question. Do they need $1.3 billion in public dollars to get that done? And I'm not convinced that they do. And the public isn't convinced that they do. And so the message that I think we're sending today to the luxury developers, right, to those that profit off of the fundamental human need.
I want to remind you, we're not voting on the TIF today.
I understand that, but as you just heard me state, they're interconnected, they're interlinked. Because again, the upzoning is giving a massive benefit to the developer. So our message is, you can't have it all. That's our message. You can't get an unprecedented zoning for 6,000 luxury units while at the same time getting $1.3 billion in public dollars. While we're told that we don't have enough money to patch the potholes in our wards, while we're told that we don't have enough money to keep 50 schools open, while we're told we don't have enough money to keep 6 mental health clinics open. So the function of this corporation, the city of Chicago, at its heart, just like all governments, is to be a redistributive venture, right? To capture the wealth that is collected, right, and ensure that it meets public needs. And that is why I oppose the TIF. That is why I oppose this upzoning, because they're interlinked, they're wedded together. So I want to ensure that we understand here that, you know, the same way that trickle-down economics hasn't worked at the federal level, we're consistently told, give more public dollars back to big corporations, give more public dollars back to the ultra-wealthy, and eventually it'll trickle down. Trickle-down development isn't working in Chicago either. It's not building the affordable housing that we need. It's not leading to the infill development that we need on the south side and the west side. It hasn't worked. And rather than giving them $1.3 billion in TIF, we should instead ask them to pay for the infrastructure that are going to be amenities for them. They need those bridges. They need those roads, right? This is not regional infrastructure developments. This is what they need for this development. They're building a park that's an amenity for their tenants. Right? So what we're saying here is they should pay for that themselves, and I bet you they're still going to make a tremendous, wonderful profit even after they pay for that. It's not our job to pad their profits. It's our job to make sure that we're capturing public dollars to then redistribute that to where they need to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alderman Smith.
Thank you very much. I regret that this vote is taking place today and believe that the argument for delaying the rush on Lincoln Yards is simple. We cannot conduct the people's business in anything less than a fully transparent and honest way. Getting Lincoln Yards done right is good business. The plan for the largest development in our history of a city and the largest TIF in our city's history, which is inextricably tied to this, is barely 30 days old, and not one public meeting has been held of the actual plan. Let us be clear. The alterations that have been made to this plan are minor. The 300 more affordable units are not really a concession, but merely a compliance with the law that 10% affordable housing be on site. There has been no large community meeting planned. There's been no thoughtful scrutiny of traffic studies, property assessments, open space requirements, and planning for schools and libraries. And this chamber, as was the Plan Commission chamber, was filled with all the proof that we need that public suspicion is high and sentiment is against this development. For my colleagues, which is, I think, most of you, who were not part of the Plan Commission process, the argument has been made to you that there has been an ample process for considering this development because of the framework process. But that is a brain-numbing circular argument. The framework was not a plan, and no plans were ever shown during the framework discussion. In fact, confused and angry residents were told month after month during the framework quote-unquote process that they'd have, quote, plenty of time to see and review actual plans during the plan development process. Now, in the plan development process, they are being told the framework somehow covered these freshly minted plans. Bottom line, the first time residents saw anything about a 52-acre Sterling Bay Lincoln Yard plan was a concept, without a floor plate even. In July of 2018, less than 6 months ago, an actual master plan has barely been out 1 month. I am sure that you would not tolerate this in your own wards. Yes, a questionable 20,000-seat stadium that was floated was rejected. And yet, the fine print shows that in exchange for shelving the stadium, the development added two new buildings and expanded three other ones. They dropped the stadium and stuck in 3 million additional square feet of development and almost 25 increase in density without a word of public comment. And yesterday again, through the press, and not in a public meeting or an official document, we learned that the height and overall density have been reduced. It went from a total density of 15 million square feet to 14.5 million square feet. But again, let's be clear about the facts and cut through the spin. Instead of adding 3 million square feet, the developer now gets an increase of 2.5 million square feet, merely by, and he shaves off 5 stories of these gigantic buildings. Instead of getting bigger by almost 25%, it gets bigger by almost 20%. That is not a reduction. That's not a compromise. That is a fig leaf. How big is this development? This development was if you put it together, 3.3 Willis Towers a month ago, and now it is 3.2 Willis Towers. Who says that's a win for an honest compromise? So let's not be confused. This development has gotten steadily bigger since its one-time presentation to the community, not smaller. And then we are told that Sterling Bay will build 3 bridges, not 2. But let's be clear about who is footing the bill. Not Sterling Bay, but the public in the form of a $1 billion TIF that is inextricably linked to this development. We don't have TIFs in Lincoln Park, which is the community that is lending its name to this development and its branding, and is immediately adjacent to our ward. We understand that we are among the wealthiest areas of the city, and we pay our part of property taxes. In fact, we support our new assessor, Fritz Kagi, because of his push for fairness and transparency in our neighborhood and across the city. My ward questions this transaction for the same reason that we support Fritz Kagi. We believe in transparency and due deliberation of a transaction. Every graphic and every visual the applicant has shown in connection with this transaction includes roads and bridges which are built on the public's back courtesy of the largest TIF in history. What other huge mistake in our city's history was not properly vetted? I don't even have to say its name. We want economic development that keeps business, keeps people in our city and our tax rolls for the long term. What we don't need is development that makes developers rich in a sprint to approval and leaves taxpayers, families, and workers holding the bag. Where is the school? Where is the library? Where is the true public park on the north branch of the river to balance this massive development? Where is the public benefit of this development? Where is it? A bridge that gets built because now we are a hostage to another 30,000 people? I don't think so. With a population planned here of at least 30,000 people from the Lincoln Yards development alone, the North Branch Park Preserve becomes an even greater imperative. We must plan for new residents, and we must consider existing tax-paying residents. We need more than what amounts to a tiny, privately owned space. And with all due respect to Alderman Burnett, we didn't receive any additional new park space here. maybe a soccer field's worth. Once again, the facts. There are not 21 usable, reasonable, and desirable acres of true open space and no public space in this development. What we have is a developer afterthought that counts the river bottom, rooftops, patches and plazas above towers and concrete bike paths that are counted as green space. Developers don't have to plan parks for the public. The public does need to. Finally, I am baffled by the logic that a failure to approve the Lincoln Yards plan development on March 7th, 2019, and not a second later, means that the city of Chicago is not open for business.
Thank you.
A rush to approve something today is an expression of fear, not confidence. Some fear that our next mayor doesn't want to grow our economy and may not be friendly to business. Well, I highly doubt that. We need to grow our economy to provide good jobs, to provide good union jobs, to provide buildings, to provide schools, to have people who want to go to our public schools. But what I do know is that railroading this today is contrary to the people's choice. Jamming this and the next and the massive TIF through the tiny window of time running out is insulting to my constituents, to your constituents, to all our taxpayers, to the next city council, and to our next mayor.
Thank you.
You are saying that no one can be trusted with the time and the facts to make a good decision. You are arguing that transparency in government,
make it just
smart
two more
zoning,
minutes.
And mm-hmm. good planning is somehow dangerous. I won't need two more minutes. Our community supports development in the North Branch Corridor. We do. It does not support this plan, and we are disgusted by this process. We want good projects, good jobs for our union workers, and intelligent planning for our city. You should want all of those things, too, and you should want something even more. You should want the respect and confidence of our citizens. You should want to demonstrate that we know this city hungers for reform. Instead of mistrusting our fellow Chicagoans, you should take a deep breath and earn their trust. Give common sense and respectful dialogue a chance. Prove that we have confidence in our united future and our collective wisdom. Do not approve this plan today. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, keep it short. I'm begging. Alderman Wagesback.
Thank you, Chairman. I won't read out the similar speech that Alderman Smith did, but I want to thank you first for allowing everybody the opportunity to speak today, and I know that you've been put in a pretty bad position here by certain people, and that this type of hearing is difficult to go through, so I do appreciate you taking all the time for everyone to be heard today. I actually think there should be development in this area, like we are doing adjacent to the project area in the 32nd Ward, just not this monstrosity of bad planning. So based on substantive, well-thought-out, experienced zoning and development input from many of my neighborhood groups in my ward and those I used to represent in the same exact area, and based on the reasons articulated at the public meetings that would have been held and at the plan commission, I am opposed to this project. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Last Alderman Villegas, and that's it. Then there will be public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just want to clarify something, and then I have a question for Mr. Reifman. Chairman, my distinguished colleague from the 27th Ward mentioned that you weren't that we didn't elect you chairman, and I just wanted to clarify that fact that per the rules, we elected you vice chairman, and then per the rules, the chairman succeeds. If there's a vacancy, the vice chairman succeeds. I just wanted to put that out there that we did elect chairman Kappelman.
So. I am vice chair. I'm not chair.
Yeah. So my question for the commissioner is the industrial corridor system. We hear that that's being spoken about. And my question to the commissioner was, is there a chance that with these funds that are created from this project, that we could put some funds in these corridors and allow these corridors to have a fund where developers will see that there are some funds attached to that corridor, and would allow developers to take a look at potentially developing in these corridors that need them, versus the aldermen having to try to get down to seek the developer and then see if those funds will be available. So in essence, creating a dollar amount that's allotted for a corridor, which would in turn attract developers to those corridors.
Thanks for the question, Alderman. Right now, there's no real funds yet. This is a nascent fund for plan manufacturing district conversion. So this would be, this and the Tribune site would be the first significant payments into that fund. I think we have originally structured it more like Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, where it goes into very, very specific projects, but you are suggesting a feature that I think we should have a discussion about and see, in connection with the law department, if there is a way to do some type of allocation sort of. I think what you're suggesting is some allocation so that different industrial corridors know there are designated resources that they can use to advance manufacturing in their particular areas. And I'm certainly open to having that discussion with you and your colleagues as well as the law department to see if we can articulate some kind of approach.
Okay. That was my question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.